Okay, do you want to clap?
Okay, on three. One, two, three.
Delusions run strong on this podcast. Rish Outfield has them. I have them. Our guests have them. If you listen long enough, you will have delusions too.
The Journey Into podcast is proud to present This Journey Into a Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. A Journey Into Star Wars, featuring numerous delusions of grandeur.
Welcome, one and all, to our Journey Into Star Wars here on the Journey Into podcast. This is a Delusions of Grandeur episode, or as some may more affectionately call it, the DOG podcast. My name is Marshall Borgullet Latham.
Boshuda, Marshall. I am Rish Outfield. Middle name is Benjamin. I guess it could be short for Old Benjamin.
Old Ben.
But when people call it the dog podcast, is that affectionate?
I don't know. Or if they just say D-O-G, maybe that's...
Last episode, you suggested that the Han Solo movie be called Delusions of Grandeur. And
yeah.
I wonder if Lucasfilm announced, yeah, that the Han Solo movie were called Star Wars : Delusions of Grandeur, would that be a problem for us? For the name of our show? What would happen?
I don't know. Yeah, it might boost up the listenership for a while, but then, I don't know, Lucasfilm might ask us to change the name or something, if they even heard it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, they... Lucasfilm doesn't consider a small one-man fighter to be much of a threat, otherwise they'd have a tighter defense. podcast.
Right.
And so we might fly under the radar there.
We might. So what's been going on? Any Star Wars-related activities lately?
Well, no. I have watched a few episodes of Star Wars Rebels, but they're all still old.
Right.
to me, they're all new. And we talked, I don't think it was in the last episode, did we? About this idea I had for another Star Wars story like the Princess Leia one and like the Luke Skywalker one.
Yeah, no, we talked about it offline, but...
I mean, maybe we can talk about that at the end of the episode, but...
Yeah, that's an interesting idea there. One of the things we were going to talk about today is that you've read the latest Princess Leia book that came out.
That's right. Yes. The reason I wrote Sleeping Princess Wakes is because I had heard the announcement that there was going to be an official Teenage Princess Leia book coming out from Lucas Books. So I sat down and I wrote a short version of that novella that I wanted to write, and we presented it on the last episode, and it's still available.
Yes, very much so.
Not going away as far as I know. And as soon as I was done with that, I was like, okay, well, I will read this book and we will talk about it in the next episode. And so now it's the next episode. The book is called Leia, Princess of Alderaan by Claudia Gray. And I did read it and I wanted to talk to you about it because, well, two reasons, really. The first, though, was I had to sort of come up with my own idea of what kind of life Princess Leia had before the start of A New Hope, and what her parents were like, and what Alderaan was like. And I just had to make up all that stuff and sort of decide what she was doing
right
when she was a 16-year-old. And it's not like I was married to the vision that I came up with, but I had to come up with what felt right to me and make certain choices. And then when I got into this book, there were choices that I'm assuming Claudia Gray made.
Sure.
Because has there ever been a pre-Star Wars Princess Leia book or story told, either in the new canon or in what they're now calling Legends?
Legends, yeah. Not to my knowledge, you know, there's a lot of stuff after the first Star Wars movie, you know, from comic books and comic strips and all that kind of stuff, and Splinter of the Mind's Eye and all that, but nothing, I don't think, pre-Star Wars Episode 4.
So while I was reading it, I found contradictions, or I found things that flew in the face of what I had written in Sleeping Princess Awakes, or what I had in the back of my mind that didn't make it into Sleeping Princess Awakes. Sort of the relationship that Bail and Leia had. I kind of had this idea that Leia's mother was the head of Alderaan, and Leia's father was Alderaan's face in the Senate and a rebel fighter and all this stuff. You know, he preferred to do stuff off-world, and his wife preferred to do things on-world, and Leia was sort of, you know, her father's daughter and liked to accompany him on his trips and all that stuff. Those were ideas that I had, and then when I read this book, it was hard to, I don't want to say justify, what's the word? It was hard to, I saw differences and I was like, well, how could, they can't both be true, and it just, it bummed me out a little bit. For example, in this book, Leia has always known that Bail Organa and Queen Breha are not her parents. That they have never kept
That's what this book decided, or Claudia decided.
And see, that's the thing. What did she make up, and what has been on the books before this book came out? And I don't know. I asked my cousin, I was like, well, maybe she just made all this stuff up. And my cousin said, well, it's all made up.
Right, of course.
It didn't really happen in a galaxy far, far away. And I was just like, no, but I'm saying that there are certain things that are canon, and there are certain things that is up to artistic license that Claudia Gray was given carte blanche to say, okay, this is what the queen is like. Like, for example, Leia could have brothers and sisters.
Right.
You know, that they're not blood brothers and sisters. But we don't know that she didn't have siblings on Alderaan that were exterminated and all that stuff, or even out there in the galaxy, things like that. But in this book...
Or did they... I'm trying to remember back to the prequels now. Did the reason that they adopted Leia, was there... Did Bail say something about them not being able to have children or anything like that?
He did. I believe he said, my wife has been unable to have a child.
Yeah, something like that.
And so in this book, they say that her stepmother, that the queen had this terrible accident or attempt on her life that has left her. She basically has the Star Wars equivalent of like an artificial heart. And because of that, she cannot have children. And I wondered, because they don't ever explain it, it's just mentioned three or four times. I thought, well, could this be from a Clone Wars cartoon? That this attempt on her life happened, because I don't know if Bail Organa and his wife show up on the Clone Wars.
No, Bail does, but yeah, nothing about Alderaan or anything like that.
But the idea that she knows they aren't her parents gives you a place to go story-wise. And this book, I feel like it wasted the opportunity, because it said Leia had never sought out who her biological parents were. She just took her parents' word for it, that they had adopted her, and they were her parents to her. And I thought, but that would be interesting. Every adopted child at some point wonders, who are my real parents? Are they out there?
Right.
Are they looking for me? Am I like them? And that to me would be a fantastic avenue for stories to explore. For Leia saying, well, I want to find out. What do you know about my father? And things like that. But they didn't go there. They just said she had accepted this and never questioned. And the big conceit in this book that flies in the face of my story is that the Empire is 100% evil and corrupt. And everybody knows it. And to me, I was just like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. Because I had in my mind that at least for a while, the Emperor would maintain the illusion that he was a good man and that he was out for the best interests of all the people. And the stormtroopers were there for your protection. not there to execute children and stuff.
Right, yeah, at least until the Senate was dissolved and they didn't have to pander to anybody anymore.
Right, I sort of got that impression. Because no one will dare oppose the Emperor now, Tarkin says.
Yep.
Which, I mean, could mean anything. But that I found interesting because the whole point of my story, even the title, is about her discovering that the Empire is bad. That's what I wanted to explore. And so this book doesn't explore that either. There's a lot of talk about the Clone Wars. There's a couple of characters from the prequels. And there were actually references to Rogue One in this book. For example, Saw Gerrera is out doing his terrorism in the name of the freedom. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder if all of this stuff was sort of forced on the writer so that it ties into the larger world, or if this Claudia Gray lady knows the Star Wars saga that well that she's like, oh, well, I'm going to put a reference to this, and I'm going to put that in there, and I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of both, I would think. You know, she probably had meetings with them, and they said, okay, well, remember at this time, this is going on, and you might want to incorporate that or this. But as far as Leia's characterization, I'm guessing maybe she had more of a say in that, as long as she didn't go against what had already been established or anything.
Well, if you could just get her on the phone, I think we could make a very interesting episode where we'd ask her these questions.
We could do that. I've never been audacious enough to try that, but I probably should be. I should be trying to get people on here to talk about stuff like that.
Well, that would be really cool. And as you know, I could ask questions all the live long day. Basically, the story of this book is Leia is 16 and she goes to Coruscant to, in this sort of Imperial Diplomatic Corps thing, which is like, I don't know, Senate prep kind of thing, where it's like the young Republicans get together and they go and they practice diplomacy, and they're given just a tiny little bit of authority from the Empire. And later we find out that is all just so some unpopular decisions can be blamed on them. But also at 16, I guess, Leia gets to declare that, you know, she's ready to be named heir to the throne of Alderaan. And she has to pass these tests. And there's like a mind test and a courage test and a heart test, you know, like sort of like an Eagle Scout merit badge thing, or like where you have to have your project. This is what I'm going to do to get my Eagle badge.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, she has to proclaim these are the three tasks that I'm going to do. The heart one is that I'm going to do something, a mission of mercy for, you know, a planet that's not as fortunate as we are. And so that stuff, those are the two storylines that are going on. And then amid that, we do get Leia discovering that her parents are up to something, that they don't have time for her, and she's uncovering something that seems like a conspiracy. And whenever she goes to her parents about it, they brush her off. And ultimately she discovers, oh, my parents are at the head of an alliance of people that are trying to stand up to the Empire. And that's the revelation that I was building toward in my story, but never got to. In fact, there is a part in the book that's almost exactly like that I described to you two years ago, where she walks in, you know, aha, I finally found out who you people are, and her father is standing right there. And the aha moment that I was really looking forward to writing. And so that was bittersweet. It was sweet because, yeah, oh, wow, she had the same idea as I did. And it was bitter because I didn't get to write it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you liked the way that she did it. Was it a good run-through of that scene?
Well, see, that brings us to the other thing. The two things I wanted to talk about on the book are that her vision and my vision didn't really jibe. Plus, I am always hesitant to refer to the prequels. I just feel like there's so many missteps in storytelling there, such as the Clone Wars happening 20 minutes ago. And so when there are prequel tie-ins in this book, which of course there would be, because the prequels actually happened, it's always hard for me to get my enthusiasm around that.
Right.
But the other thing that I wanted to talk about was I discovered about a third of the way through this book, and this might be a discussion for a whole episode, but I discovered that this book was not written for me. That what this is a YA book written for teenage girls.
Oh.
About Leia falling in love for the first time and Leia rebelling against her parents and Leia discovering who she is deep down. You know, it's written for teen readers in mind and female teen readers at that.
Yeah, and I guess that makes sense. If she's 16, you know, I guess I should have put that together.
That should have been a red flag, but I don't know. I mean, the story that I wrote, I didn't have that in mind. And if I were to write a book, I would write it so that Marshall Latham was like, oh my gosh, I loved this book.
Right.
Not Marshall Latham's youngest daughter. So there are tons of descriptions of the clothes and the hairstyles and the decor and teenage things of, you know, I like this boy and I'm not sure if he likes me. And if he likes me, is it because of me or is it because one day I'm going to be queen of Alderaan? Oh, if only there was a way to know. And like a catty other girl and, oh, that boy gets under my nerves, but maybe I wonder if I like him. And all of that stuff is fine. There's nothing inherently wrong with any of that stuff. I just realize that that's not aimed toward me.
Yeah, I can see that. I guess, yeah, I didn't see how it was marketed either, whether it was would have been in the YA section of the bookstore or just with all the other Star Wars books in the science fiction section or whatever.
Well, I believe it's sort of a sub-line of Star Wars books. There's an Ahsoka Tano one. There's a Jyn Erso one, there's a Leia one, I would think there'll be a Rey one eventually, that all have female protagonists, and they're smaller hardcover books so that they look different than the other Star Wars books. And then, yeah, they're aimed at girls, and that's fine, because as Big Anklevich says, I was hoping you would finish the sentence, boys don't read.
Oh.
And he usually yells it, and I like that. So, of course, you know, you want to write something that will appeal to the people who are actually reading books.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think I would have enjoyed a little bit more espionage, a little bit more danger, sneaking around, and, oh, shoot, what if I get caught, and what's going to happen, and murder and stuff. Like, Leia learns how to use a blaster in this book, but it's just an excuse so that she can be taught to use a blaster by the love interest.
Oh.
And can, you know, reach around her arms and say, okay, no, you need to hold it like this. And their fingers can touch and, oh, she gets a thrill. And
right.
And that's cool. I guess I'm just too old to remember that thrill from when somebody taught me to use a blaster.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're probably used to the Star Wars books being written for middle-aged men.
By middle-aged men for middle-aged men. By Risha.
That's right.
There is one more thing I wanted to say about the book. There's a really interesting part where she goes to one of the moons of Naboo.
Hmm.
And she meets with the Imperial Moff of that territory. And he was Captain Panaka in The Phantom Menace. Only now he's Moff Panaka.
Moth. Oh, that's interesting.
Because he's from Naboo and the Emperor is from Naboo. He got this cushy regional governor gig and Leia seeks an audience with him and he's taken aback when he sees her and immediately he recognizes who her mother must have been.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that to me was really interesting.
So, because he was in Phantom Menace, right?
Right. He was like the head of her guard, I think.
Yeah. He was with them on all Tatooine and all that stuff. Yeah, I think.
And he says, you know, by any chance, were you adopted? And she says, as a matter of fact, I was. And he says, do you know who your parents were? And she's like, well, my parents are the queen and viceroy of Alderaan, and that's all I ever ask. And he's just like, oh my gosh. And as soon as their meeting is over, he wants to get a secure line to the Empire. And I think, oh wow, now this is interesting. Because who would he be contacting in the Empire with this information that he found? And then Saw Gerrera blows him up and all of his building, and they all die. So he never actually gets to make this call. But my guess is he was going to contact the Emperor and let him know Anakin Skywalker has a kid.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I could be wrong. And it's like, was Padme's pregnancy a secret from even the mortician that embalmed her?
Yeah, would he have even known that she was pregnant?
Like, how are you an active senator and hide that you're pregnant? I don't think you can.
True, yeah.
She was on Coruscant in that terrible movie, still meeting with the Republic Senate.
Right, yeah, late term, right.
So they just didn't know who the father was?
So they never answered that. They never responded to that.
Anyway, I found that really interesting, that idea of that he was going to contact someone and we never told who it would be.
And that was even from the prequels, so that's good that something like that intrigued you.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. It's not something I would have thought about because I discount those three movies.
Right, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's not a plot point that ever would have come up had I been writing the Teenage Princess Leia book. And so, yeah, there's that. And I feel like we've been talking too long about this. Do you feel that way?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think anybody cares.
Okay.
Unless they're tired of hearing it. We've talked a lot about Princess Leia this year.
Well, I think that's natural.
Yeah.
She's close to everybody's heart. I mean, we already loved Princess Leia, but once the actress was gone, then we were able to take a step back and say, this is what this character has meant.
Right.
Not just to girls, but to everybody.
Yeah.
Anyhow, there's one passage in the book where Leia's talking to her parents about what are you guys willing to do? What are you going to do to stop the Empire? And the parents say, well, we have to be very careful. You know, the things that we do have to be in secret. The things that we do have to be small. And let me just read this paragraph, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Leia could remain silent no more. Standing up to the Empire means taking a risk, a big risk. Everybody has to have known that already. Her mother returned to the table, though her attention was for her daughter rather than the meal. Of course they knew before now, but there's a great difference between knowledge in the abstract and the concrete reality of dead bodies and destroyed cities. We have to live with the absolute certainty that our freedom from the Empire can't be bought only with information, resources, and money. In the end, the price will be blood. Hardly able to believe she dared, Leia said, what if that means the blood of the people of Alderaan? Sharing a stricken look, her parents gazed at each other for a few long seconds before Bail said, if we're to be true to Alderaan's ideals of justice, dignity, and peace for all peoples, then we must share equally in the necessary risks.
This is before she knew that they were rebels?
No, this is after she has already discovered what they're up to.
Yeah, I was thinking it'd be kind of hard to disguise that from her with saying those kinds of things.
Right. Well, the thing that I find interesting about that is because ultimately every man, woman, and child on that world pays for what her parents and she do. And that is kind of awful, especially to think about. You know, you'll hear a lot about the greater good.
It's all about the greater good.
The greater good.
You know, certain sacrifices have to be made for the greater good.
How can this be for the greater good?
The greater good.
Or, you know, there are small evils that are acceptable. If you keep in mind the greater good.
How can this be for the greater good?
The greater good.
Shut it!
About doing things that are bad because eventually something good will come out of it. and all of those millions, if not billions, of innocent people that, okay, the Empire destroys. Leia does not destroy them. But her actions lead the Empire to do this. I mean, more so than her parents, even.
Sure. Stealing the plans.
Leia refuses to tell where the rebel base is, and so a billion souls lose their lives.
Yeah.
And that is terrible, but it's a price that she is willing to pay. I mean, she sees that it's going to happen, and she still, well, she lies.
She thought she was going to be able to get out of it.
And I don't know that we ever analyze that we ever think about that and what that would do to a person. And so when you and I spoke last on the phone, I was talking about I would like to do a story after the medal ceremony at the end of Star Wars where Leia and Luke talk about what they have lost, and Leia finally is able to just grieve for her world. I thought it would be an interesting story set around the evacuation of the Yavin base.
Yeah.
And Leia gets sent on a mission to, I don't know, meet with Mon Mothma and the Mon Calamari or something. Just establish where Mon Mothma is when the Death Star is blown up. And Luke goes with her, and perhaps they stop where Alderaan was. And Leia gets a moment to grieve for everyone that she has ever loved. I just thought, wow, that would be a cool glimpse into who this woman is.
Yeah, because and we've talked about it before, how she's the one comforting Luke when he loses Ben, when she's lost an entire, you know, all of her family and all of her planet and, you know, probably all the friends she's ever known, kind of thing.
Yeah, and her line is, there will be time for sorrows later.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, that would be an interesting insight into her character. And
Luke's perspective as well.
Maybe it gives Luke a chance to try and comfort her.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you say to a person who has lost everything.
Yeah, because, I mean, he lost his aunt and uncle as well, but not everybody he's ever known.
Well, essentially, he's lost everybody he's ever known. He lost Biggs. His parents are already dead, as far as he knows.
Yeah, that would be interesting, because you could lace a lot of stuff in there, you know, with knowledge of, you know, that their brother and sister and the Darth Vader's their father. You could kind of throw some lines in there that would be a nod to the audience, you know, where the characters don't realize it at that point, but it could be a little profound in what they say.
I agree. And yeah, another thing that this book doesn't do, that I think if I had been charged with writing a Teenage Princess Leia book, Leia is strong with the Force, but we've never seen that except for that moment at the end of Empire. And I think I would have enjoyed exploring her having intuition, her having a knowledge or something that she just that can't be explained. She just sort of writes it off as, I was lucky to have turned left instead of turned right, kind of thing. I mean, if you were to write a Rey story set on Jakku before Force Awakens, I'm sure there are many times when the Force has worked through her without her realizing that that's what's going on. It can't just be the first time that Kylo Ren does his mind thing with her.
Right. Well, that's interesting that you say that. I guess there was an anthology book that came out called From a Certain Point of View. And I heard, it was about a month or so ago, that there's a story on there that focuses on Yoda. And at times, Ben shows up and talks to Yoda. It's at different times, I think.
Like the forced ghost of Ben shows up?
The forced ghost of Ben, yeah, comes and they talk. And I guess in there, it's revealed that Yoda always wanted to train Leia. That it was kind of a disagreement between Ben and Yoda, which one of the children should be trained, and that Ben always wanted, or Obi-Wan always wanted Luke to be trained, that he thought he was the one, where Yoda felt that Leia was the one that should be trained, that she would be stronger in the Force and those kinds of things. So I kind of want to read that now and see how, I mean, I don't know if that anthology is a canon book or just a, I mean, it's new, so it must fall under the canon, but I thought that was an intriguing idea.
Well, I love that idea.
Because, you know, there is another, you know, that
yes,
that
could... I was going to say, had they known that Leia was Force sensitive when they made that movie, maybe there would be a line. But of course there is the line. And yeah, Yoda says this one, a long time have I watched. All his life has he looked away to the future, to the horizon, never his mind on where he was, what he was doing. And it makes sense that he would be watching Leia as well. I love that idea that he wanted to train Leia.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool too.
I would probably be happy to read that story then. I don't know. Anyhow, I feel like we've talked a lot about the book, but hey, it pays for itself now. I bought the book and now...
there you go.
Now we got a good discussion out of it. And so, yes, if you were to read a book, did you ever read any more Captain Phasma comics?
I did finish out the Captain Phasma book. It was only a 4-issue comic book series. I guess there's a whole other novel about Phasma, too, where it goes into more of her history. And
again, I guess it's all these female characters in Star Wars because... Why do you think that is?
I think they're trying to make more interesting female characters, for sure. Because, you know, for years, Star Wars was known as the male universe or whatever. But... yeah, I think they're trying to make the effort to make interesting, well-developed female characters. You know, they can do that in the, you know, because they did such a bad job with Phasma in Force Awakens. You know, the only way to overcome that is to, you know, have these backstories in comic books and novels and whatnot. So yeah, I'm kind of interested now to read the Phasma novel, but in the comic book is just kind of a short period right after Force Awakens. I talked about it those couple episodes ago, about the first issue where she escapes from Starkiller Base and she erases all of the evidence against her that she's the one that lowered the shields. But she finds out that one other person knows about it. And I'd have to look it up to see what the names are of everybody again. But anyway, so he gets off on a TIE fighter. She finds a TIE fighter and chases him. And they go to this planet, and she's still tracking him. And then there's a pilot, a TIE fighter pilot, another female character that's involved in this. And then she kind of lands on the world and goes in disguise among the, I guess they're not the indigenous people of the planet. They've kind of come there as a refuge. And they're up against a battle of all these creatures that existed on the planet before. But Phasma's really only interested in finding this guy. But she kind of gets wrapped up in whipping up the people, you know, building them up to go again. Because the guy is now a prisoner of this other alien race that's on the planet that's against the people that Phasma's with. And so, you know, she kind of rallies the people to storm the stronghold of this other alien race and to take over the planet. Otherwise, they're going to be destroyed. And so you start to get this sense that, hey, she's really getting into this. And she alludes to her past, that she's done this before or fought against this kind of tyranny before or whatever. And so you kind of think, hell, some of her good side is coming out. But once she finds the guy, she kills him. And then the pilot sees it but tries to pretend that she doesn't. And Captain Phasma pretty much leaves the people fighting against this alien race to die, and leaves the planet on the TIE fighter that the other guy had. And so it just shows you that she's ruthless, and she doesn't have necessarily a heart of gold, that kind of thing. So that was kind of interesting, but it was kind of short as well.
Well, we'll see. A month from now, we can talk about whether Last Jedi redeems the character of Captain Phasma. I think we talked a year or two ago about, well, if she has to come back, you and I just assumed she had died, but if she has to come back, what can you give her to do? And my idea was to be obsessed with this one stormtrooper that betrayed you all, that caused the destruction of your base and personally tossed you down a garbage chute. And so, you know, she marshals her not inconsiderable resources to finding Finn and his friends. And I think, well, that's something. Certainly more than she had to do in Force Awakens. But yeah, we'll see what she does. I mean, maybe she's got a very, very small part. But it's a shame that she's such a well-designed character that there was so much buzz around Captain Phasma. And then the movie came out and, I mean, she at least could have been the traitor stormtrooper that fought Finn.
Sure. Yeah, I've thought about that.
And the fact that she wasn't, I mean, it's a disappointment, but it's also just, I think the filmmakers, Abrams, didn't realize that this character was going to capture so many imaginations. A female stormtrooper, and she's chrome, and oh my gosh. Otherwise, they would have given her more to do.
Yeah. That's the other thing about her in Force Awakens is, I mean, she just seems like a weak person to go against. She doesn't seem formidable because, you know, just Han and Finn just go in and, you know, take her prisoner and make her do what they want and then put her in the garbage chute. She doesn't seem like this fearsome foe that is, you know, ominous and very hard to beat. You know, she just seems kind of like a punk in there, where I think there's obviously more to her than that. So hopefully they can overcome that.
Yeah, we will see it in our next episode. Let's make sure to talk about it.
I guess along those lines of trying to up the female character aspect of Star Wars, have you seen any of the Forces of Destiny YouTube shorts that have come out from Disney? Or Lucasfilm,
I haven't. I went to the Disney store the other day and they were showing what looked like hand animated, a cartoon that had Sabine Wren and a chick that looked like Asajj Ventress in it, like a shaved head woman. And I assumed that that's what you're talking about. But
yeah,
I have seen tons of commercials lately that are all female-centric. They're all aimed toward a female audience, and they're Star Wars commercials. And that, to me, has been really eye-opening, just because it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was like a Rouge One Maybelline campaign last year. Not the one that you made up, but like there actually was like makeup from the Star Wars universe. Get it at Walgreens. And that stuff is still so hard for me to get my head around. Because for so many years, Star Wars was aimed at boys. And girls just never cared. They didn't get into it. There was nothing for girls in that franchise. And you know, Renee Chambliss will argue with me. But it's just amazing now that they all have female protagonists. And they all have ad campaigns aimed squarely at the girl.
Yeah. And for the most part, it works. I mean, it they're good characters and all that. Sounds like the Leia book was a little bit disappointing to you in that way. But for as far as the movie stuff goes, it's all been good. But this Forces of Destiny shorts, I mean, yeah, they're taking all of the female characters and giving them these little shorts. So you'll have a few with Rey, a few with Leia. And they take little scenes that could have happened. Like there's a Leia thing where she has to help the Ewoks fight against something on Endor. And then there's another one where they meet a Wampa on Hoth. And she, you know, and Chewie and I can't remember who else was there. Probably the droids, you know, have to fight this Wampa. Then they'll go back and they'll do a Sabine Wren one or a... Oh, who is...
Hera Syndulla?
Yeah, yeah. She's in there, and then, well, they have a couple Jyn Erso ones, and then there's one where Jyn Erso and I'm losing everybody's now.
And Sindel Tawani.
No, the Mandalorian.
Sabine Wren.
Yeah, Sabine. Ah, darn. They meet up, and there's one with Ahsoka and Padme. And they just kind of, you know, do all these different things. And or there's a few of them that I really liked. There's one with Rey when she, just after she gets BB-8. You know that scene in Force Awakens where they're going through the desert on Jakku and the little thing props up with the eyes and watches them go away?
Yeah.
Well, there's actually a monster underneath that. And they so there's a little scene there where Rey has to fight off this monster to save BB-8 kind of thing. And so that was a good one. I like there's a couple with Ahsoka that are pretty good. I think one of the Jyn Ursos. And there's been a couple where Han Solo has been in there as well. And he just looks really goofy. And he almost looks like a Disney prince, you know, like Prince Eric from Little Mermaid or something. And the voice is pretty good in spots, but sometimes it's a little bit off for a Harrison Ford voice. But what I thought was interesting, there's this scene on Endor, and it's kind of funny because the Ewoks are taking all the stormtroopers and tying them up and putting them in a pile next to the fire. They're going to eat the stormtroopers, essentially. And Leia, you know, says, we have to do something about this, and sends Han off. She goes, go to General Sandula's ship. And so they're on Endor. This is, you know, after Return of the Jedi. And so Han and Chewie, they go and they talk to Hera. And there's a little bit of banter there between what's better, the ghost or the Falcon. You know, the episode's kind of weak and lame as far as what's going on. But there's some neat ideas there. But that's kind of a spoiler that Hera is going to survive all the Rebels episodes, and she's going to be there for, you know, as if she's been there for the whole rebellion and all the first three movies. And that was kind of an interesting thing to me that they would reveal that in one of these little shorts.
Well, they have plans beyond Rebels that I still don't think they have announced, and it could be that Hera is part of it. There was a reference to her in Rogue One, if you recall.
Right, yep.
So they may know where she's going and say, yeah, well, we might as well just have her there because she would be there.
Yeah, but I don't know. I for the most part, I feel like the forces of destiny weren't very good except for a few exceptions. I like the concept of what they're doing, but the execution was, to me, kind of lame. Again, I'm probably not the target audience. This is probably for younger girls, not teen girls, but younger. So I guess that all kind of goes together. I don't know.
Well, there's, yeah, just an embarrassment of riches as far as the Star Wars universe goes that we're in the middle of right now. And, you know, even when you and I were kids and there was an Ewoks cartoon and a droids cartoon at the same time, we didn't have this much Star Wars product just pouring in.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much you can't keep up with it.
And have you managed to avoid the trailer so far?
I have. I've getting harder and harder because the closer it gets, the more it's on TV. And then YouTube has it as commercial before you watch the whatever clip you're watching on YouTube. So I'm doing pretty good at that. I did go to see Thor Ragnarok, and I was all prepared to cover my ears and close my eyes during the Star Wars trailer. But for some reason, the theater I was watching it at didn't show the trailer. So I was good. I didn't have to worry about it.
They were looking out for you. It was the Force.
They were. You know, I think it was the fourth week that Thor was out by the time I saw it. And it's not the premiere theater that I went to see it at. So maybe they cut some things out or whatever.
Well, yeah, good luck. I have also managed to avoid it. Although there have been TV spots popping up if you watch TV. And apparently the TV spots are showing stuff that is not in the trailer. There's even more potential, I don't know, for spoilers, but potential for something. And it will be fun when you and I next talk to find out, you know, how much was a surprise, how much were you able to avoid, or did somebody at work let it slip, you know?
Right.
Chewbacca eats the porgs right before you saw it.
Yeah, I guess the one thing, like, after I watched Thor, I went back and I started watching the trailers. I mean, I had watched the, or at least part of the trailer with Hulk in it. So I knew that, you know, obviously I knew Hulk was going to be in it like we talked about last time. But there was a lot of details in some of the trailers that I'm glad I didn't watch. I mean, just key scenes and key lines that were really impactful in the movie were all ruined in the trailer. So I'm really glad I didn't hear those.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I never went back and watched the trailer. So I don't know. I know somebody said that they showed Carl Urban with the rifles, firing the rifles at...
Oh, yeah.
Like Skeleton Warriors or something like that in the trailer. And I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't even know he was in the movie.
Yeah, neither did I.
And so I'm glad I not only didn't see that, but didn't see that he eventually betrays Hela.
Yeah, and then, Thor's talking about I lost my hammer, and I didn't know that until I saw it in the movie, which was good. Spoilers, by the way, if you're listening to this episode and haven't seen Thor.
Oh, so you hadn't seen Hela shatter his hammer in the very first trailer?
I guess not. I guess I didn't watch the whole trailer all the way through or whatever.
Well done, dude. That's great, because, yeah, they show that right up front on that first trailer. I mean, it's supposed to be this terrible shock, because it certainly is to Thor.
Yeah. And then the whole line where, you know, Hela's fighting with Thor at the end, and she's like, I'm the goddess of death. What are you the god of again? You know, I mean, that was a pretty key moment, I thought, so.
Oh, and that was in the trailer?
Okay. That was in the trailer, yeah. I mean, he didn't answer her, or they didn't show, you know, the result of that, but that line was in there. Anyway, it's more justification that I don't watch trailers for big movies that I want to see.
Well, yeah, I can't wait for us to talk about that. I mean, I think we could do a whole episode about keeping things secret and what is important for people to know. And for a Star Wars movie, all you need to let people know is the release date.
Yes.
The pundits are saying that it could do $230 million. It could do higher than that in its opening weekend. And you don't need to know who lives and who dies.
Yeah, I mean, so far I've been able to watch the teaser, the first teaser trailer that comes out for a Star Wars movie. And that gives me enough imagery and stuff to get excited about it, but it doesn't give away too much, at least so far. So hopefully that'll continue to be. So, well, I did want to talk briefly about the Book of Henry, but I think we'll wait another time for that.
Oh, okay, yes.
It doesn't really fit into our what we've been talking about this whole episode.
Well, I would be happy to sit down with you and do another episode where we talk about that, because, yeah, a friend of mine said, you want to know why Colin Trevorrow lost the job, the Star Wars job? It's called the Book of Henry. And I thought, whoa, really? And so I'm fascinated by that idea, and I kind of want to see the movie
Maybe you should see the movie, and then we'll talk about it and see if that really is why Colin Trevorrow lost Star Wars. Because I would tend to disagree with your cousin, or your friend.
Okay, so you saw it?
I did. I have seen it, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, we can definitely talk about it if you want to. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that might make for better if we both have seen it and we can kind of speculate on things. I mean, it may have contributed to it, but I guess in my opinion it shouldn't have. Anyway, preview for further discussion.
All right, that sounds good. I think we've reached the end of our allotted time.
I think so. So, yeah, well, thanks for your insight, and it's always good to talk Star Wars with you.
Well, thanks for hanging out with me. Everybody at home, feel free to send us questions or comments. The next time we meet, I think we will all know who the last Jedi is.
Ah.
And it better be Finn.
It'll be a Porg.
I don't know.
All right. Well, this has been Marshall Latham.
And I'm Rish Outfield.
And may the Force be with you all.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Can I include myself in that?
Yes, definitely.
All right. Same to you, sir.
You bet.
The Journey into Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur podcast is presented under a Creative Commons.
Fiction. Can you
Fiction,
can you give me just a minute?
What?
Can you give me a minute? I've got a couple of things to say, and then you can do the Creative Commons.
I'm not standing around waiting for you to be done. My time is precious.
Are you implying that mine is not?
Implying? It's clearly not.
Okay. Well, just let me say this one thing, and then...
No, I'm leaving. You had your chance. Goodbye.
Wait, Hey, guys, this is Rish Outfield. Just going to add this little tiny bit here on the back. On the back end of the podcast, while Marshall's not looking. Earlier in the show, I talked about that idea that I had of doing a story that would take place after the end credits of the first Star Wars. And I meant to come back at the end of the show and talk about it, but I forgot. We said our goodbyes, but here I am now, and Marshall is long gone, so I can just say what I want for as long as I want. As anybody who's ever listened to my podcast knows, I'm capable. Anyhow, I just thought I would take this opportunity to thank Marshall for his dedication to this show. You know, the Delusions of Grandeur podcast, it doesn't make any money. It's a labor of love. He is much, much busier than I am. I am many things, but a podcaster is one of the things that I do regularly. You know, I've done it for 10 years, going on 10 years now. But Marshall is super busy, and he always struggles to find the time to meet with me. And he makes himself do it. He was on a work trip in San Francisco when we had this call, you know, trying to fit it in where he could. And I really appreciate that effort that he puts in. And I mean, maybe you do too. If you exist, I mean, I don't know. I've never asked him, how many people listen to the Delusions of Grandeur? How many people call it dog? I've never asked him that because the answer would probably kill me. But if you are listening, you know, I want to give you a... I want to urge you to support Marshall in this. You know, he did the Journey Into podcast for a number of years, and now it's really just this podcast that he does with me that's left. And I know that if... more people had supported the Journey Into podcast, you know, financially, I guess is what I'm talking about, it wouldn't have been as much of a struggle for him to do. When Big and I were in the midst of the Doonstief, we knew that we had a core group of listeners that would be there every single month. And that anytime we wanted to go see a movie and do it for the show, that we could afford to. Because of those listeners. And so here's what I propose. Please donate to the podcast. I'm going to ask Marshall to put a link to his PayPal account. This is not something I've ever asked before. I doubt I'll ever ask it again. But I would like, if this show means something to you, that you donate to support Marshall and his show. I don't know if he's like us, but we have to pay Libsyn to host our podcast. We have to pay GoDaddy or whoever it is for the domain of Doonstief.com. And one day, we're just not going to do that anymore. But don't let that happen to Marshall on his show. And this show on Delusions. So listen, if you will do this, I in return will write this story. And we'll run it on the show. At this point, I've only got notes. Basically, General Dodonna and Princess Leia and the other guy, I can't remember his name. I did 25 years ago, I knew his name. They all meet and they say, we need to evacuate this base. And where will we go? What do we do? And meanwhile, there is word coming in that several systems or planets or groups of people are now all in for the Rebel Alliance because they destroyed the Death Star. Hey, this thing actually works. This thing actually made a difference. Maybe some of those planets
were too afraid of this Death Star or of just the Imperial Armada, but suddenly there's a bolstering of confidence because of what Luke and Leia and you know, Han and the others accomplished. And so my thought is that General Dodonna sends Leia on a mission to meet with Mon Mothma. We can find out what Mon Mothma was doing during the first Star Wars movie. And maybe like the Mon Calamari fleet of ships. And they go there. Luke goes with her. And they go to the ruins, the space dust that was her world. And Leia gets that chance to grieve. Now, I talked about that earlier in the show. I don't know. I would like that story to be told. You know, you could call it A Time for Sorrows or whatever. But also, you know, in the back of my mind, I thought, well, let's find out what happens when the Rebel Alliance discovers that Darth Vader survived the Death Star. And at least he, if not the entire Imperial Space Fleet, knows where the Rebel base is now. And there are going to race there to lay siege to it. So maybe you could get an action sequence there. The problem is when I first mentioned this to Marshall, I asked him, you know, has this story ever been told? And he pointed out that not only has it been told, but it's been told recently in like the new comic books. And that there were stories, there were, I would assume, books that were written about what happened with General Dodonna and why we never saw him again in the sequels that followed. I thought that I had this really clever idea. I was like, that's a story I want to read, let alone write. And then also just, you know, an opportunity for Luke and Leia to bond a bit. I mean, we know that they are siblings, but at this point they're not going to know. And it just seems interesting to think about that dynamic of, you know, a farm boy with nothing. Although he's got a shiny medal now. And a princess with nothing. That is interesting to me. If it's interesting to you, yeah, I guess I could go ahead and write that story. But even if it isn't interesting, if you enjoy this show, please donate. I feel like PBS, you know, we'll throw in this tote bag, because we want you to support programming like this. But that's what it is. I've been talking for a while, too long. Oh, fake Sean is gone. Anyhow, I'm going to ask Marshall. The next episode we'll do will be about Last Jedi. But I'll ask him when we record that episode. So what happened with that? And, you know, he can give me the good or the bad news on there. Thank you again for listening to our show. And in advance, thanks for supporting it. Take care. Easy, Chewie.
You can see here the Delusions of Grandeur podcast orbiting the forest moon of Journey Into. Although the Creative Commons license of this podcast is not yet operational, it does have a strong defense mechanism. It is protected by a non-commercial, no-derivative, share-alike energy shield, which prevents it from being altered, repurposed, or sold. Until this shield is down, our cruisers can share the fire with whomever they like, while the fighters attempt to knock out the main reactor. May the Force be with us.
One of the things we were going to talk about today is that you've read the latest Princess Leia book that came out.
That's right. Yes, that's what you were hinting at where you said anything Star Wars going on. Yeah, the last time.
Well, no, I was thinking if you've gotten a bunch of toys and stuff like that, but.
Well, like there are three different Praetorian guards. Do you know what the Praetorian guards are?
I don't, actually.
They seem to be the Captain Phasma or Boba Fett of Last Jedi. They're the red-cloaked armored guards in The Last Jedi. And
okay.
For some reason, they've been really, really difficult to find the action figures of. And so, yes, I have been trying to scoop those up when I find them. But that's not very interesting. Sorry.
So our next episode will be about The Force Awakens. Our next episode will be about The Last Jedi. As of this recording, it opens this week. And I'm excited. Trying to keep expectations down, you know? And I'm sure we'll talk about this when we do the episode, but I'm going to be seeing it on Thursday, which is opening night. And we got our tickets like a month ago or longer. And yeah, pretty cool. Oh, this isn't a funny story. I probably wouldn't even remember to tell this story when we do our actual episode, but I've got a captive audience here. I got some work on a TV show. There's a show that's shooting locally, and I've mentioned it a couple of times. And they were looking for people to play orderlies at an emergency room scene. And so I called the casting agency and said, oh, yeah, I'd like to do it. And they said, okay, well, we're shooting at the hospital on next Tuesday and next Thursday. Which can you do? And I was like, oh, I don't care. I'm open on both of those days, as it so happens. So they put me down. They booked me, as you say. And I was super excited. And then on Thursday, last Thursday, I spoke to my nephew and I said, hey, guess where I'm going to be a week from today? Meaning I would be seeing Star Wars. And he said, oh, are you working on that show again? And I went, oh, shoot. Oh, crap. Oh, how did I forget about that? So I called the casting agency and they said that the agent had gone home for the day. And I said, oh, gosh, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, can you leave him a message? I need to cancel for next Thursday. And they're just like, oh, well, you know, he just left. Let me give you his cell. So they gave me his cell phone and I called him and he was in the car. And I was apologetic. I was like, hey, I'm so sorry to bother you. They gave me your number. The thing is, I'm booked, you know, to play an orderly on Thursday and I can't do it. I have to work. Yeah, sorry. And the guy says, when do you have to work? And I said, I have to work on Thursday. I apologize. You know, we talked about it and, you know, it's a week from today. And I hope I've given you enough time that you can replace me. And I apologize. And he said, wait, you're an orderly? And I said, yes. And he's like, the orderlies are working on Tuesday. And I said, Tuesday? Oh, really? Well, it says right here, and I picked up this piece of paper, Tuesday. And I said to the guy, I'm sorry, I am dumb. Yes, Tuesday is great. And he's like, so you're not canceling? No, I'm just, could we maybe pretend this conversation never happened? And he's like, okay. See you on Tuesday. And he hung up. And I'm not a smart guy. I'm surprised that the guy didn't say, hey, you know, let me cancel you for Tuesday too. Because clearly you're not dependable. You don't know what's what. A voice is telling me that you have plans to see Star Wars. And that's why you're trying to worm out of this. In retrospect, not a very good story. But it's too late to cut it out. Sorry.